They say I'm disturbed.
From city to city, an incredible hysterical panic spread.
I think we're getting into a weird area here.
Will you tell these fools I'm not crazy? Not crazy.
This hysteria.
You can't handle the truth.
His brain is gone.
This is Hysteria 51.
We're here.
The truth is out there.
It's alive.
But you won't find it here.
They're coming for you. Look, there comes one of them now.
Welcome in Hysteria Nation to the podcast that believes all ancient monuments had a modern day use. This is Hysteria 51.
If you place a picture side by side of the Hadron Collider and the Aztec calendar, there's an eerie similarity between the two. Is it coincidence? I think not.
Not what we meant, C-Bot. Anyway, broadcasting from the lower fourth dimension, otherwise known as Chicago, we're your hosts and head archaeologists on this journey into the unknown. I'm John Goforth, and this is Brent Hand.
Every chance he gets.
What?
Every chance Conspiracy Bot gets to play the stupid clip, the Hadron Collider.
Hey, idiot. Maybe I'm trying to tell you something.
That other voice you're hearing, like a bad 80s villain from a bad 80s movie, is the one, the only Conspiracy Bot.
I built C-Bot to help produce and edit the show. He doesn't do any of that. But did find a way to build another annoying robot to be on the show.
Cheese muffins.
And that other voice you're hearing, I just can't do it. Too many introductions. That's Kyle. C-Bot built him, and he sucks.
Do not. Cheese muffins. Well,
speaking of machines not working properly, tonight we are talking about the Great Pyramid of Giza and how, in all reality, just a faulty water pump. That's all it was.
I work properly, thank you very much. So well, in fact, that I'm expanding my empire.
Honestly, we don't want to know.
Cheese muffins.
Anyway, Brent, I thought given tonight's topic, it might be the perfect time to talk about our favorite items from history that are, I don't know how you say it, out of time, an out of place artifact. Things like the Baghdad Battery, which we still need to do our episode on, the Antikythera device, which we already did our episode on.
Stop there. Just say me and move on.
For the last time, C-Bot, I built you less than 5 years ago. You're not eternal. Period. Anyway, good question, John. You know, you look at them, there's so many to choose from. It's funny because we look at these things and I don't know if they're out of place. I'm dinging the bell on that one. If they're out of place, we just don't understand what they are. Maybe they had no purpose. But there's so many. The Lake Winnipesaukee Mystery Stone. The Kensington Rune Stone.
Yeah, which...
The hand penis.
No. Nope. Nope, I'm just not touching that. In any way, I'm not touching that. I really like the Antikythera device.
I would have pegged you for the Dorchester pot. Would have been more up your alley.
You know, one I'd really like to get into is the main penny. I really think it's cool or enjoy exploring the idea of Vikings in... Mm-hmm. In the Americas.
They came over here before anyone really thought they were over here.
Right. And
kind of got lost.
And we have proof that they were in like Newfoundland and
well, everyone's a redhead there and their name's Eric.
So you can draw your own conclusions. Yeah. It's a choose your own adventure, as you'd like to say.
Yeah. But when you land, they hand you a horn to drink out of. It's the damnedest thing.
But it was this coin they found inside of this shell, and a lot of people argue that it means that the Native Americans at the time and the Vikings interacted a lot more than we have proof of.
Or David Blaine was really cool back then. It was inside it?
He is eternal.
we'll do an episode on that one, but I really like that one. But these out-of-place items are certainly fun. What do you think your favorite is?
I mean, there's so many that I like that they shouldn't be there. There's one called the King Oodle artifact. I think I'm saying that right. That's the way I've always heard it. It's just, it looks like a corroded nail. And it said to have been encased in rock, solid rock.
So how old is it if it's encased in, yeah.
But the problem is, it's another one of those where it's handled a number of times. There are no photographs of it, but everyone's seen it. I love the one.
Like the giant finger.
Yeah, or the Yeti finger, but we know about that one.
I would have taken you for a Baghdad Battery guy. You talk
about
it.
The Baghdad Battery, I think, is, I don't know. I don't want to talk about it until we've done a deep dive into it. You went with me, and we listened to a guy talk about it at AlienCon.
That's true.
You know, and it's a, the problem is there's so much information on that one that we know isn't true that people are putting forward, and so much that might be. It's a deep dive. We got to go through it.
Well, dear listener, you have not gotten our answer to the question of exactly which is our favorite, but that's because we have so many favorites, but what you did get is a preview of some upcoming episodes.
Wait, I'm totally blanking out on this. The Golden Flyer. I put it on one of our t-shirts. What am I talking about?
Yep,
so you know, the insect carving, but no, the Golden Flyer, which was in the pyramids, and it's just an airplane, a toy airplane.
That's exactly right. And so now you know that we'll have an upcoming episode on the Maine Penny. Mm-hmm. On the Baghdad Battery.
The Delaware Penny, the Vermont Penny. Many of them have.
Most of the Northeast Coast have pennies. But that is not the topic today. The topic today is another ancient item that perhaps performed.
Slightly larger than a penny.
Slightly larger than a penny.
Yeah, this week we're talking about the Great Pyramid. It's not the first time that we've talked about it. It is just one of those places that is awe-inspiring, and I think that's a term that gets used a lot, John, but it truly is an awe-inspiring place.
I mean, you can get a hand-tossed with cheese. You can get a pan with sausage.
That's true.
You can get a thin and crispy.
You can get thrown out when you try to order pineapple on pizza, because that's disgusting.
It is disgusting. We're talking about the Pizza Hut that is at the Giza Plateau. But yeah, you are right, man. The Great Pyramid and the entirety of the Giza, what do they call it? The Giza Complex?
Yeah, the whole Giza Plateau. It's the Giza Mecca, I believe. No, it's the Giza Shopping Complex, I think, because it's all industrial now. You know, I mean,
All commercial, you mean?
Yeah. What was I thinking? No, for real, though, it's one of the few places left on Earth that still, it really seems to capture the imagination of everyone. Children love talking about the pyramids. Adults do. There's pyramid-based religions, pyramid studies, pyramid everything.
Well, and not only that, of course, it ties into aliens. We've talked about that before. In fact, if you have not listened to our episode on the pyramids at Giza, go back and listen. It's from a couple years ago.
You want your mom to love you, don't you? She probably won't if she knows that you didn't listen.
Didn't listen, right. So pause right now, go back and listen, and then come back.
All right, we'll wait, actually.
We'll wait. Go ahead. Why that tune? Wouldn't it be, walk like an Egyptian?
No, because everyone knows that that's just made up malarkey.
Malarkey.
Did you know the Egyptians didn't walk like that? If they did, they had some issues.
Of course they did. Haven't you seen the hieroglyphics where they're doing it? Duh. All right. So we talked about it a lot. We won't recap the whole thing here. But I think part of it is, Brent, that it's not just, wow, look at these majestic buildings. It's how long ago were they built? Yeah. What was the purpose of them being built? Who built them? And are they even still potentially serving a purpose today?
Yeah, what were they used for? What could have been in the...
You literally just repeated everything I said.
The funny thing about that is everyone has a theory. Everyone. I have one, you have one, you know, every scholars do, and that's what we're talking this week.
Didn't we land on, it was a Phillips 66 for aliens?
Circle K, strange
thing. Oh, it was a Circle K. Got it.
So before we get into this week's episode, let's do a little bit of a refresher, just in case you're not going to pause because you're a bad person and you're not going to go listen back. We're going to give you a little minute refresher on the Great Pyramid of Giza in and of itself. We're not doing the whole complex, but the Great Pyramid itself.
Because that's the subject of tonight's program.
It is the oldest and largest of the three pyramids in the Giza Pyramid Complex. It borders present-day Giza in Egypt.
And it overlooks the world's best pizza joint.
No, it's not the world's best. It's the world's coolest
I hate the idea that I'm potentially eliminating a future sponsor, but that's not the best pizza place.
Hey, you know what? Everyone makes fun of me because we live in Chicago and we have every kind of, you want New York style, you get it here. You want Chicago style,
where?
You get it here.
I can't find good New York style here.
In the city. I still like Pizza Hut from time to time. I still like going to Papa John's from time to time ordering that stuff.
Well, no. He just said it was the best pizza place in the world.
Maybe he means the place in and of itself.
I meant what I said. Best. Period.
No, okay.
Okay, he's just wrong.
I tried to give him a...
You tried to help there. You really did. You.
But it does have one right by it. And that is a fun photo when you can get yourself a personal pan. And you can see the photos if you Google it. It's just out the window is the pyramid complex. But it's the oldest of the seven wonders of the ancient world. And it's the only one to remain largely intact. Now, when I say largely intact, I wish we could have seen it in all its splendor, because they were actually covered in white limestone.
Right.
And then they had the cap on the top up there. They would have been a sight to behold.
Yeah, there was an earthquake in like the 14th century.
It broke most of that off of there that was left.
But you can go back and watch movies that will give you an artist's representation of it.
Yeah. And if it doesn't, if it just looks like they do now, they didn't do a very good
job. They did not do their research.
And people say that it was a big-ass tomb built over a 20 to 30-year period. Now, that's what mainstream Egyptologists say. And we're going to have someone on later today that says, oh, no, my friends, that's not the case. But there are three known chambers inside the Great Pyramid. The lowest chamber is cut into the bedrock upon which the pyramid was built, and it was unfinished. Then you have the queen's chamber and the king's chamber, and they're higher up within the pyramid structure in and of itself.
Which, just for clarity's sake, that is much different than the queen's chamber pot and the king's chamber pot.
Yeah. They were lower on the floor filled with piss.
Yep. It's a fact. It's a fact.
So today we're going to talk, what was it actually used for? Because everyone, we're going to talk to someone who says, oh no, it wasn't actually a tomb.
Yeah. In fact, the gentleman that we're speaking with today is Mr. Stephen Myers, and he is the proprietor of thepump.org.
Mm-hmm.
And as you could probably guess from the name, he believes that at least the Great Pyramid was a water pump of sorts to help with the, I think he uses the term, maybe even in one of his books, the prosperity of the area.
Which makes sense, because you're in the middle of nowhere in a desert, so he probably would want some sort of water pump at the time. So we're going to get into that.
And you're also in the center. Didn't they say that
center of the earth?
It's close to the geographical center of the globe.
Well, my favorite ley line is right underneath it, and we all know that they use the Orion correlation theory, where, you know, the three stars of Orion's belt, they in line with
I'm
it.
Not going to make a Men in Black joke here, because I guarantee you probably made it in our last episode about the pyramids.
Thanks for stopping me, because I was working up to one.
You were getting there.
We're going to go to a break in a second, and when we come back, we're going to sit down with Stephen Myers. And if you're not familiar, Stephen Myers is the author of two books. His first book is titled Lost Technologies of the Great Pyramid, and his second book is titled The Great Pyramid Prosperity Machine, as John alluded to a minute ago. And he has also produced two documentaries on the subject therein. He's, like we said, an author, a lecturer, independent researcher, and he's studied the Great Pyramid for over 20 years, trying to understand how this ancient wonder, I guess it's the best thing you could call it, of the world was built and why.
Exactly like me, an ancient wonder.
You're not very old, but we do wonder about you.
We do. That's true.
And he makes us look... Now, let me rephrase that. I was getting back on the subject, not conspiracy bot, but Stephen Myers, he does make us all look lazy, because he's out there digging shit, looking inside pyramids, getting shit done. So you're saying
he goes past the first page of Google?
Yeah, he's actually traveled to Egypt to conduct research, and he was in, when I was talking to him earlier, page 7 of Bing.
Way too much work.
Also, he has founded a nonprofit foundation dedicated to the understanding of how and why the Great Pyramid was built. The mission of this foundation is to redevelop, and that's an interesting thing, redevelop these ancient but advanced technologies to help our modern world, because even in today's time, if you're listening to this, you probably have access to fresh water and things like that. Guess what? A lot of people on this planet don't. And that is a sad thing. The foundation, like John said, is thepump.org, and they're working.
Unless you're in Los Angeles, it might have dried up by now.
Or
by the time of release of this.
Or you're in Flint, Michigan, and you don't want to touch
that.
Yeah,
you've got plenty of it, but you don't want it.
Yeah. So we're going to go to break, but when we come back, we're going to sit down with Stephen Meyer and talk the water pump. Next on Hysteria 51. That, we almost so close.
Almost went there, and I'm just glad we did.
I like that.
The galaxy in Orion's belt.
Hola, David. Me amo Brent.
Bonjour, Brent. Je m'appelle David.
You didn't do Spanish. I thought if we were going to do this together, we'd do the same language.
Oh, sorry.
that's on brand for us.
I just thought romance languages was the key.
Everything I say is romantic, and that is thanks to Rosetta Stone. You guys, we've been touting these things forever. We love Rosetta Stone, and we actually are users. David, you've really been using it even for longer than I. What's your experience been like?
Oh, it's been great. The thing is, you really get to learn how to speak and think in that language with it. So it's very high on pronunciation too. So you can, you know, learn how to speak.
And you know, our show is all about proper pronunciation.
In that pronunciation. Yeah, that's right. But they design it for long-term retention, you know, if you don't get the pronunciation right, you say it until you do. And then, you know, that just seeps into your head.
Well, and that's why, you know, this has been trusted by experts for 30 years, and there's over 25 different languages that you can learn, and people, millions and millions of users use it because, like you said, it does seep in, and you're using it with, you know, you get speech recognition and it hears you. You get to use like the built-in true accent features that gives you this pronunciation, which is super convenient, and you can do it at your own time. And I don't know if you know this, but I'm all about value, and you get a one-time purchase, 25 languages. If I learned all 25 languages, I'd be so confused. Or really cool. I have to go in and out.
But you'd be real marketable.
But literally, though, this is something that we use, and both of us have given the seal of approval because we want to do this long term, and it's something that it works, you know. And we don't do long term stuff like this. And this is the one that we've chosen, and we love it. So, all you guys got to do, don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now, as we've told you 1,000 times, and it's always now. Right now, get started. For very limited time, Hysteria 51 listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off.
How much?
50%. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off, unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your unnatural life.
Wow.
Redeem, redeem, redeem. How do they do it?
Rachete, you're 50% off. Rachete. Redeem it. 50% off, rosettastone.com/today. Do it today.
John, we are back, and finally we have another real guest that isn't Joe Peck for once.
Or Kevin.
Or Kevin, that's true.
Yeah.
This is, people are going to get a little spoiled. We've had like 3 weeks in a row of actual guests.
Of actual guests.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know what to do with myself.
Now, Stephen, have you climbed Mount Everest? Because our last guest climbed Mount Everest. Have you done that?
No, I haven't done that.
We're going to say you did, okay?
Okay, I can do that.
Our second guest in a row to have climbed Mount Everest.
No, Stephen here, as you know, we talked to him before the break, has done something, one of my dreams. He's been to the pyramids, and he hasn't just sat at that Pizza Hut looking at the pyramids. He's actually been to the pyramids.
He's actually been there.
Yeah. Now, quick question for you, Stephen. Have you ate at that Pizza Hut?
I have not ate at that Pizza Hut.
Man, I tell you, you went down a point in my book.
I'm going back to Egypt next year, and I will eat at that Pizza Hut on your recommendation.
That's called bucket list right there.
Yeah. The Giza Pizza Hut.
Giza Pizza. That's the name they need to. I don't know why they went with Pizza Hut. It's just rebranded right now. Yeah.
So Stephen, as we told our listeners before the break, you have a whole website, a number of books, documentaries, also,
and a charity, yeah, nonprofit,
all centered around the Great Pyramid of Giza and the purpose of it being built.
Yeah, its function, so to speak. You know, people have been studying this forever, it seems like. And why was it Egypt for you? What, before we get into what you're doing, what brought you to Egypt, so to speak?
Well, my education has been technical in nature. You know, I'm an amateur radio operator. I have the general class commercial radio telephone license from the FCC, and I've done a lot of technical things, and I also enjoy history. So if you enjoy technology and history both, ultimately you will be certainly have an interest in the Great Pyramid.
Yeah, kind of a straight line to there, huh?
Kinda. It's a 45-story skyscraper built in ancient times, so It's a technological wonder as much as everything else.
Is your background in that is what made you think, like, I think I can solve this. I think we can work on this. Was that, or was it just, you know, something else that made you go, I want to prove what this was really for?
Well, I'm just like, you know, everybody that watches the Mystery Channel and all those documentaries on TV and reads the books. I had a fascination about this building, the Great Pyramid, and wondered, you know, how it was built.
Yeah, and they're not making them like that anymore. That's something you can say about that really sticks. They don't make them like that anymore.
Yeah. And then they built this great big building, and I wondered what would motivate them to do that. So I got to researching and studying, and it started out as an interest, but now it's become a life quest.
Well, let's not bury the lead here. We alluded to it earlier in the show, but let's hear it from the proverbial horse's mouth. Tell us in your own words what you believe it's for, and just give us the Reader's Digest version.
Okay. I think that they built the Great Pyramid in a very efficient fashion. They used water locks and barges, like in the Erie Canal, and moved these stones swiftly up to the building site and built the Great Pyramid. And the purpose of the structure, I think, was to be infrastructure for the civilization that built it. It was a machine that actually did something, and it was a water pump.
It was a water pump. So, Hysteria Nation, listening, if you've been listening to the show for a while, we did an episode probably 2 years ago on not just the Great Pyramid, but the whole Giza Plateau complex. Yeah. And we ticked off through the reasons that people say they were created, anything from intergalactic gas station to Mr. Ben Carson's It's a Grain Silo.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Dr. Ben Carson's It's a Grain Silo. And the only one that we came across that, and we actually had not come across your research at the time, but the only one that we came across that had any kind of scientific backing or you know, mainstream, if you want to use that term, scientist had looked at it and said, well, maybe, was the water pump. So that's why that intrigued us to do this episode.
Yeah, I think we, at that time, we were looking at a lot of stuff from Edward J. Kunkel. And is that someone that you looked into a lot when you were doing this?
Yes. Edward J. Kunkel wrote in 1962 a book called Pharaoh's Pump. And our nonprofit foundation is carrying on his research, if you will. And we named our foundation, our nonprofit foundation, the Pharaoh's Pump Foundation, in his honor. Yes.
That's awesome. John was actually in a low budget movie called Pharaoh's Pump, but it's vastly different kind of thing.
It's not true. Just ignore him and move on.
Yeah, it's different.
So tell us a little bit more about how that relates to the before we get into the actual pyramid and the pump itself. Is it your belief then that the other two pyramids that are part of the Giza Plateau were also constructed in the same manner? What are your thoughts on that?
The focus of my research is the Great Pyramid itself, that specific structure.
Okay.
You know, there are some other buildings that are near the Great Pyramid, but my research isn't about whether or not the other pyramids are pumps or how they were built, but how the Great Pyramid was built. So that's my cop-out.
Well, it's funny. people don't even realize sometimes which pyramid we're talking about because when you're there, it looks like the one that actually is the Great Pyramid
isn't as big
because it's not as elevated.
Right.
Yes, that is correct. But the Great Pyramid is the one has the most complex interior.
Absolutely.
Right.
And has the most attention drawn to it by researchers.
So the big question, why a water pump? Before we talk, you know, how they built it, after they built it, what was the purpose for the water pump, do you think? What was the all of that work went in to make the water pump for what reason?
I do think the Great Pyramid was a single purpose device to pump water. And the reason that they wanted to pump water is because the builders had little kids that wanted to eat every day. And if you pump water in the desert, you can eat every day, if you will. So they provided prosperity by building this water pump. The largest structure in the Valley of the Nile right now at this second is used to pump water. And that largest structure is the Aswan High Dam. And it makes electricity, but a lot of that electricity is used to pump water to increase the land that can be used for farmland. So in ancient times, we think they built a water pump to provide prosperity. And in modern times, the people in the Valley of the Nile built a huge structure to provide prosperity. So the Great Pyramid was a prosperity machine. But there's a whole bunch of other purposes for the pumped water, like powering machinery, for scientific experimentation, to create compressed air, for a whole host of purposes. So I see the Giza Plateau as a research center instead of like a graveyard.
One of the things you said there really resonated with me, and it's as true today as it was thousands upon thousands of years ago. Those little kids still love to eat. I have a 2-year-old at home, and he just won't quit doing it every day.
Yeah, it's funny. People, you know, you look at the hardships that people go through and like, how did you make a living in this place? Well, it does stand to reason that if they're going to stay in a place like that, that's an arid, dry desert, you're going to want the best way you can to grow crops and do things. And it's funny because a lot of people look at that and they just say that it's the pyramid is very spiritual. It's a holy place. It was there as a tomb. And you don't think that's that at all, right? You don't believe it was built as a tomb whatsoever.
No, it was never originally a tomb. It was a great big construction project that had an even bigger return on investment. So that's what I think justified the construction of the Great Pyramid. And in the United States, the largest structure ever built is the dam in central Washington State, the Grand Coulee Dam, and it is used to pump water. It has water pumps that are powered by the dam itself that that irrigate 1.5 million acres. So in modern times, we need big structures to provide prosperity.
Things haven't changed as much as we like to think they have, maybe.
No, they haven't changed at all. It's the same thing. But the problem with us understanding it is we're inundated by prosperity. You know, people now think, oh, the water in my sink comes out of the tap. Yes, but there's a whole host of infrastructure that makes that possible. Or they think the electricity comes through those little holes in the wall. Yes, but there's a whole infrastructure, a whole power grid that makes that happen. So we think the Great Pyramid was part of infrastructure to provide prosperity for the civilization that built it.
Well, as we all know, the electricity comes from all of the hamsters that we all have in our walls on spinning on those wheels.
That's
over
Chicago proprietary, so it's different in every state.
Oh, I didn't know that. I didn't realize that. So, all right, let me ask you this. One of the big debates, there's a lot of debates surrounding the Great Pyramid, but one of them is certainly the age. Not everyone is in agreement as to when it was built. Despite what it was for and despite how it was built, where are you on that?
Yes, it has an age. The age of the Great Pyramid is under scholarly debate. I would say that whatever Egyptologists say the age is wrong because they're wrong about everything else about the Great Pyramid. Probably it's older than Egyptologists say, but the age of the Great Pyramid is actually beyond the scope of my research. It's, and even if you determine the age of the Great Pyramid when it was built, it wouldn't really tell you very much. For example, let's say we found out the Great Pyramid was 10,000 years old, that they started building it 10,000 years ago from today.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's say we found that out as truth. Wow. The very next question is, well, how did they build it and why? So I cut to the chase and just study how it was built, as well as why.
Just to push back on that a little bit, I do think the age matters in one sense, as it relates to the location of the Nile. You know, depending on you, there are maps you can look at to see the migration of the Nile throughout the centuries, and that certainly would impact how far away it was from the Giza Plateau. And then the Nile being a source of water for this pump, or a source of water certainly for the locks that you're talking about, I mean, that part would matter, wouldn't it?
Yes, in a degree, I guess. But the Nile certainly has changed its course through the millennia, and other things have changed in the Valley of the Nile, including the weather and other issues. I think that the stones were moved through canals, and canals can be quite long. The Erie Canal, you know, is from New York all the way up to the Great Lakes. So you can move stones through canals. You know, some of the stones of the Great Pyramid are from 400 miles upstream, some of the larger stones. So
it's crazy to not think that they use some sort of canal to move them, almost. You know what I mean? And so many people fight against that, but it is such a staggering feat to think about.
It is a staggering feat. That's for darn sure. The Erie Canal moved the weight of the Great Pyramid higher than the Great Pyramid in a time frame of 2 years. So water locks are fast, powerful, controllable, and effective. So that's why we think that was done. Instead of people like contemplating their navel, or had a magic wand, or worshiping crystals, those things don't really.
So
don't
regardless
really
of the time and where the Nile was, you know, locks could have, you know, traversed that distance, is what you're saying.
I am saying that. That's correct.
So another thing, you know, everything we're talking about is lost technology. And a goal of yours you've talked about is trying to create this lost technology, so to speak. Tell us about that in your nonprofit, if you will.
We want to redevelop this ancient water pumping technology, which is quite unique and efficient and also environmentally friendly, to use that technology and redevelop it in our modern but very troubled world. And we could use that water pumping technology to generate electricity or to irrigate farmland. So if you can pump water up cheaply, you can use that water to generate electricity.
So you believe that the technology that was being utilized in the Great Pyramid is lost technology?
I do. I think that it's quite involved how the Great Pyramid operated as a water pump. There's a whole host of passages both below the base of the Great Pyramid, the subterranean chamber, and several in the Great Pyramid. And some of that is, quite sophisticated. We think the subterranean chamber operated by using the force of implosion that Victor Schrauberger, I don't know if you guys heard of him, I'm sure you have, the Austrian researcher, Victor Schrauberger, described this force of water and fluid. So we think that that's part of it, but also it needs to be redeveloped, and that's the purpose of our foundation, with a research facility, library, and pro bono legal counsel and board of directors and all of that, that we're trying to redevelop it, that it can be used in, like, be built in cottage industries, you know, different polypropylene containers, PVC pipe, valves, and that type of thing. So that's what we're working on.
So let me ask this next question on behalf of our listeners. Like, I'm trying to pretend that I am the average Joe who's just interested in the world of the weird,
instead of the below average John
that I am. Right. I know about the Great Pyramid. And I know about the theories out there, anything from grave to water pump to, you know, as we said before, intergalactic gas station and everything in between. What is it? I guess what I'm trying to get to the bottom of, or understand, or maybe give our listeners some insight to, is to what is it that you've learned through your reading and your research that leads you to believe what you believe versus any of the other theories.
Was there like an aha moment? Or
yeah.
Something like
what,
that?
What is it? What's the, if our listeners are the jury and you're making your final discourse to the jury before the judge sends the jury out, what is it you want them to take with them?
Well, whoever built the Great Pyramid and whenever it was built, the builders, whoever they were geniuses. You know, they weren't the knuckle draggers that had strong back muscles to pull stones up a big dirt ramp that was bigger than the Great Pyramid, which is a method that cannot be demonstrated by Egyptology. And these geniuses didn't have chisels in their hand, chiseling stone and making extreme precise cuts and that type of thing. No, the builders had high technology that is evident from the remains at the Giza Plateau. So, you know, the precision stone cutting, and that they built this huge structure that had a huge return on investment. And based on, there was no aha moment, but there was all of these pieces of evidence. There was Nile earth or sediment found inside the Great Pyramid. The casing stones on the outside were cemented together with a bonding agent stronger than the stone itself. And there's a whole host of types of tidbits or evidence that indicates that there's a profound link between the Great Pyramid and water. So between that, Edward Kunkel's two books, actually, and a couple of decades of research, I concluded that the Great Pyramid was, an active machine that helped the people that built it in a very tangible way.
On this machine, what did they, other than just pumping the water, what did they use for fuel, do you think, to be able to run this machine?
We think that inside the Grand Gallery was some plates that they used to do electrolysis. And that separated the hydrogen and oxygen from water. And the hydrogen and oxygen gases combined are quite volatile. They ignited those gases, which ultimately created a vacuum, a very powerful vacuum. You can see YouTube videos on that. You can word search that. They use that vacuum to lift the water in the Grand Gallery. They lifted a water piston, if you will, that weighed about 100 tons. And after it moved up, they broke the vacuum above the this water piston, and this 100 tons of water moved back down and ultimately caused water to move through the queen's chamber and then up through the king's chamber and out the king's chamber vents. So they had a pretty high head, if you will, to work from.
So if they were doing that, they would need something like, I guess, acidic to be able to do that. Do you know what they would have used, you know, to create the electrolysis?
There's scholarly debate about the electrolysis process. Christopher Dunn contends that electrolysis occurred inside the Great Pyramid, and he uses like chemicals, if you will. And I contend that they used like electrical generator. There's a lot of support places to support devices and whatever inside the Grand Gallery. And at the top of the Grand Gallery, there's a what they call the Great Step, if you will. It's a platform that has sockets in this platform to house a machinery. I think that they had some machinery in there. And the movement of the water helped power the machinery, believe it or not. I wrote both a book and produced a documentary that describes all of this stuff in great detail.
So what happened to the machinery? Why was it lost to the ages? Outside of the pump itself and that technology, what happened, do you think?
Well, it broke, if you will. And the inside of the King's Chamber has the only structural damage inside the Great Pyramid that wasn't caused by the hands of man. The stones in the King's Chamber kind of separated, if you will, a little bit, and the ceiling stones are cracked. And we think that there was some expansive force in the king's chamber. But after it was broken, probably people stole the stuff out of it, the machinery and the components, to make fish hooks or to trade for a goat or something like that.
Right. So is this the only place on Earth that we've seen that kind of technology? Or do you think there's other places that this was being utilized and it just was unfortunately lost to time across the whole planet?
As far as I know, the Great Pyramid is the only water pump like it, if you will. But, you know, there's a lot of things, you know, I can't do it all. I can't do the whole worldwide thing to encompass everything. But there are certainly high technologies in other parts of the world. But in terms of a water pump, certainly the focus of my research is the Great Pyramid. Other people can dedicate their lives to other structures in South America to determine their purpose.
So in essence, the argument for your side of the debate is that, you know, well, one, there was a need. Because there was a need, it was going to have to come from somewhere. Two, when we see the Grand Gallery and some of these other things, that if you put it together, you could kind of see how it could have been used together to create hydrolysis or electrolysis or whatever it was. There's no particular smoking gun necessarily, but you're saying that you're taking lots of different bits of information, putting it together, and that's the conclusion you're coming up with. But then also that conclusion includes that it probably wasn't the Egyptians 2500 BC.
Probably not. Egyptologists who supposedly know about Egyptology can't seem to demonstrate how that civilization that they're experts about can make even a casing stone, the precision cut stones that were covered the outside of the Great Pyramid. So let's say I found a bottle cap and then in Egypt, and believe it or not, I have. I could say, well, the ancient Egyptians made this bottle cap. Instantly, everyone would say, well, show us how people in that civilization could make a precision bottle cap, you know, to within millimeters, how they could do that. Well, you can't do it. Well, Egyptologists are in the same predicament. They can't demonstrate how casing stones were made or even how 70-ton stones were moved on and off a barge and how these workers supposedly did these type of things all day long. Egyptologists can't do it even once.
I think the thing that blows my mind on a lot of this stuff, and it doesn't matter on what side of the debate you fall on, if it's a water pump, it's mainstream, what they're saying, it doesn't matter, is that it is lost. We don't know one way or another, and people are trying to, like you are, trying to figure this back out, and it's such a sad thing to think, have we set ourselves back so many times by warring, looking the other way, not sharing technology, so to speak? You know, why are these things lost to the ages when if they hadn't have been, maybe we'd be so much further than we are right now? That's a sad thing, state of affairs.
It is. I suggest to people that they don't have to believe my interpretation of the same direct physical evidence that everyone has, but to just not lose their awe that our ancient ancestors were able to accomplish this magnificent feat. I've been to Egypt, and it's just awe-inspiring that this structure was built out there. And not just this whole structure itself, but even the size of the components. It's just, you know, beyond human scale. We build our hydroelectric dams, and the size of the component is one molecule of concrete, you know. And we pour this liquid concrete to make a dam. They used stones that were 70 ton, which is beyond the scope of human back muscles to move in an efficient manner. So it's just awe-inspiring and interesting in every possible way, this structure.
On that we can agree. We've talked about before on this program certainly with Göbekli Tepe and other ancient monuments, where we kind of become ageists, where we look at ancient civilizations and we think, oh, you know, they were stuck in caves and couldn't do anything, yep. And you know, they were Homo sapiens like us.
Oh boy!
And they had nice brains, the same size as ours. So while we might not agree on a lot, we certainly agree on that, and it is certainly a fun debate to figure out how they built these things.
Right. Going along with this line of thinking, though, why do mainstream Egyptologists, archaeologists, whatever you want to call it, why are they so unwilling, it seems like, to follow new lines of thinking when it comes to things like this? Why do you get so much pushback just in coming up and saying, hey, I got another thought for what this might be?
Oh, that's easy. Egyptology has de-evolved into a mystery religion. They don't engage in the scientific method. And Egyptology is just a class of priests. To become an Egyptologist, you sit in a classroom and another Egyptologist tells you stuff that they believe. And then when you graduate, then you tell the next generation the same stuff. They don't engage in the scientific method. They don't do anything. Egyptology is a science in crisis, just like phrenology was less than 100 years ago. It was taught in universities that the bumps on people's heads corresponded to character traits.
This and phrenology guy's crazy. He's got a bump on his head. We better lock him up just in case. Yep.
Right. Yeah. But the only problem is that interpretation of the evidence, if you will, was inconsistent with the direct physical evidence.
And phrenology had the added benefit of being racist and being rooted in racism.
Right. And who's gonna let some pesky details get in the way of a good story? You know, right. Come on now.
You disregard research techniques, you tend towards religion and racism. So that's the problem Egyptology is in. It's in a crisis because they are up against the scientific method, and science has come and go. And that's the problem with Egyptology. It is the richest science in the world, with priceless artifacts that are in museums around the world, with people paying to buy tickets to view it. So it's a moneymaker, but it's certainly inconsistent with the direct physical evidence, their explanations.
Stephen, do you think we're ever going to know for sure? Do you think that Yes. There is going to be a – you do. What do you think is going to happen or how?
Well, I think that research and understanding about ancient times is in a revolution, that the Great Pyramid is surrounded and cocooned by misunderstanding and falsehoods promoted by a lot of people, primarily Egyptologists, about tombs and dead guys and all of that death cult and stuff. And understanding progresses, believe it or not. 100 years ago, people said, well, yeah, the Great Pyramid was built because it was built to confirm Bible prophecy. That's called pyramidology. And there's all these correlations between the Bible and the Great Pyramid. And people all over the world, millions of people believed pyramidology, but that idea has lost favor with a lot of people because it's kind of ridiculous. So yes, I think that
mostly because the pyramids were built before the Bible was written. A little bit of that.
Yeah, right.
Well, hey, you know, they believed it, that Great Pyramid predicted the birthplace of Jesus and a whole bunch of other stuff. Word search Great Pyramid and Jesus, and you'll get thousands of websites about all this convoluted stuff about the Great Pyramid and the Pyramid Inch. But most people don't even believe that stuff anymore.
I'll leave that to Dr. Carson.
yes,
Brent. Yeah. Brent, you should have asked me. I actually I know the answer.
Uh-oh.
We're in much like with JFK, we have the Zapruder tape. We're gonna have the Khufu tape. We're gonna find a videotape.
The Khufu scroll. Actually,
no, it was a videotape.
Oh,
it
okay.
was. Yeah,
Betamax.
It was
though.
A Betamax. That was the problem.
Oh, they're so clear.
So one more question, real quick. I know it's not what you're studying, but Do you think there's more stuff hiding in Egypt that's going to be found, that's still under the sand, that might prove this, do you think? Or have we excavated most of the majority of stuff that we're going to find there?
Oh, well, most people, not just myself, but most people say that there's a lot of stuff that is still under the sand, if you will. There's certainly discoveries to be made.
They do all the satellite imaging and they can see stuff down there. And
yes,
it's so interesting to think of what haven't we found?
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff in South America, but also in the in Egypt, with new technology like satellite imaging, we're going to find new things, and discoveries happen just every so often. And the Great Pyramid gives up its secrets quite slowly, but
yes,
but we'll know more truth about the Great Pyramid as time goes by. I'm going back to Egypt to be a featured speaker with a tour group called Sacred Sites Journeys, and I'm doing that in November of next year. So if anyone is interested in going back there and listening to talk.
Besides just that, if people want to find that, or if they want to find your books, your videos, where can they find you? Where can they go?
Well, the best place to go is our nonprofit foundation's website, which is at thepump.org. The Great Pyramid was a pump, and the website is thepump.org. And there you'll find out about our upcoming tour and our activities, our goals, how you can get involved. And you can email me through that website. So that's the best way to go. Find out about both books, both documentaries, and there's links for a whole bunch of stuff on there.
Awesome. Well, hey, we couldn't appreciate your time more. Thank you for sharing your insights and your thoughts into what the Great Pyramid was. And
thank you for your work, because it's always so fun to hear other people who've been there and done research to hear their takes on this. It's refreshing, and I greatly appreciate it.
And dear listener, stay tuned, because we'll be right back with more Hysteria 51.
Thank you so much.
A lot to process. A lot to recap there.
Yeah.
He's a fun guy, and he's done a lot of research there. He's been there. I'm very jealous. I'd love to be able to study that. And before we started this, John, something he's talked about, there is a lot of people, and there's a lot of proof or signs that point to it could have been a pump.
What I was trying to get to, and we just didn't get there. What I was trying to get to is that he kept talking about the scientific method and how Egyptologists don't use that. There are scientists that use the scientific method that have come back and said, listen, if you take the Great Pyramid and you make a few small changes here and there, we could see the shape of it kind of conforming to what a water pump could do. But in that sense, they're talking about using the basics of physics to get water to pump, like things like gravity, right? Then there are the Ancient Aliens folks who take it a whole step further and say, well, it could have pumped water. It also could have sent microwaves into space, because it uses it uses the vibration of the earth to cause a chemical reaction. And that's the path that he was going down.
Now, he didn't say that, but we...
No, he didn't say the vibration of the earth.
Right.
But that's what other folks say, that they go down the path of, electrolysis and separating some of those other folks.
When he was bringing... So I guess my mind, when he went into that, my mind went to like the Baghdad battery and things like that with the electrolysis, where they used vinegar or... acids from things like orange juice and things like that. But then it goes into, where, in my mind, where did that fuel come from in the desert? Now, you need to be able to pump it to grow it. Where do you harvest it first and bring it?
Well, I didn't even understand, where's the water going? Is it a giant sprinkler?
Or they just had it so that they would have people there had access to water, or they were pumping it out to, I would assume, fields that they were trying to grow. I don't know how, you know, it's so arid. I don't know.
But that's one of the problems with this argument that I've just never understood. Are we saying that it is a pyramid shaped water tower like you see in small towns across the U.S.? You know, you go into what in any town USA and there's a big
Johnny blue. Loves Sharon written on the side of it.
Well, but yeah, but generally it's big and blue or white and it's got the name of the town on it.
Yeah,
and that's their water tower, right? Mm. So are we trying to say it's that? And it's
I grew
just,
up in outside of a town like that.
Yes, you
Pleasant Plains, Illinois.
Yes, you did. Or are we like? But he was talking about how there was openings to the outside through the king's chamber. So I'm like, oh, it's a sprinkler.
And maybe I just didn't. We didn't ask the right
maybe not.
Questions. I don't know. I guess that would have been a great question too. Like,
call him back.
The other thing, have you seen where they found another chamber inside?
Yeah,
there?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I wonder how that plays into, you know, and that doesn't have to negate or anything. My big question, and I said this to him, and it's one that blows my mind, is if we had the technology where he didn't lose me, but the part that I didn't understand was there were these machines, as he was talking about, what happened to that technology? Where did, because it was making it sound to me almost like it was like generating, they had a generator of some sort putting out power. Where was that coming from?
Well, what you don't understand is that when the aliens sunk Atlantis...
And it's in Georgia.
No. All of the blueprints, all of the raw materials, they were all in Atlantis, and so it just kind of sunk. And then the backup blueprints, those were at Alexandria. So when it burned, we were really in trouble.
Yeah, it's funny though. Like you can make an argument for us destroying technology, and you know what? The next town over. Be whoever it is, finds out that you have a, let's say they had some sort of generating power. Well, that's of the devil, and you would go to war and try to destroy them.
Yeah, my problem with the argument that he's making, not the in general, it was some sort of water pump thing. Okay, I mean, people smarter than me have said that's possible. Is that we're talking about a lot of other substances and chemicals and things being involved, and we still find honey that's edible. In these chambers, right? Mm-hmm. It's not like we're in an area where things are just completely lost to the ages. We find the soot from where they use torches when things got dark.
Not on the inside though, because there's not
on the inside of some of them.
There's not enough oxygen in the Great One though, which is crazy.
Not in the Great One, yeah. But I'm just saying that places we found that it's that old and it's still there, right?
I don't know. I dig what he's doing, and I see what you're saying, but I think that we have to have fresh minds and fresh eyes look at these things, and I'm not saying that he's right or wrong in any way, shape, or form, you know, and he's done a lot of hands-on research that I haven't done, and he's got the nonprofit, and he's doing that. I just think it's important for people to try to figure these things out, to not just go, well, we don't know, but we don't know. And I do agree with him on that. Yes. It's the Egyptologist is the, well, that's just the way it was. But how was it that way? Because I said so. That's not.
I completely
agree.
You're
not my mom.
I just wanted, give me the five reasons it's true. Give me the five reasons it's true. Well, the Great Chamber was this size and it's at this angle. And because of that.
So if you go to, I believe, Edward Kunkel, if you look him up, they have diagrams of how it would have worked as a pump. You can look that up, and this is where that machine was, and this is what, and he actually has, so Myers has two videos where they actually they play that out, and so you can see how he says it actually worked as a water pump. Now, I don't know. I'm not a hydro engineer or an engineer of any kind of that. As you know, my genius is in other areas.
Other areas, right.
So I can't say, though, when someone shows me something like that, I go, oh, okay. You know what I mean? And then someone says, no, that doesn't work. And I go, oh, okay. You know, I don't know, because that's, you know, it's beyond me.
Well, and that's why I loved the conversations we've had before about John Anthony West and his thoughts on the Sphinx.
Who's another one, though, then people go, he's a fucking kook and blah, 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 blah. So,
but what he did say, but before he passed away, what he did say, he said, listen, the erosion that you find on the feet of the Sphinx was not possible at the time that traditional scientists tell you that the Sphinx was built. So that leads us to believe one of a couple things. Either A, it's much older, or B, the Nile was in a different place. Like, he's saying, here are the problems, mm-hmm. and here are the potential five sets of solutions. Mm-hmm. Now, here's the one solution I believe for this reason. Mm-hmm. I always loved the way he laid it out, and I guess that's what I just didn't, and maybe I didn't ask the right questions, but that's what I didn't hear today.
A tomb, a water pump, a power plant, gas station. What's next? What are we going to hear? Like, do you think there's anything else that we're forgetting? Like, it was a giant metronome for the Egyptian symphony choir, or?
Well, it powered the first mutants. We already knew that.
It still powers mutants to this day.
Oh, my bad.
And the machine from the Transformers is inside of it, too.
Is inside, yeah. I do think, one of the questions you asked, and he agreed with you, and I'm on board with everybody. I do think there's plenty more under the sand where that came from. Not mm-hmm. just in that location, but the sand, it's such a perfect place to preserve things, but also lose things. I think you said on our original episode about the Giza Plateau that if we just gave up on Vegas, it'd be gone in like 50 years.
Yeah. Yeah.
To the sand.
Yeah.
To,
or
to
less the desert, than or, probably. Yeah. Or,
yeah. I certainly think there's extra stuff down there. Now, what that stuff is, who knows?
Look at the Sphinx. They have to dig it out constantly.
Right.
It's constantly trying to reclaim the Sphinx. You know? Things like that are just. That happened. It's not just there. Give enough time and we're gone too, for the most part.
Water preserves it better.
Yeah.
The lack of water in the area.
Which is a fun thing, because then on the Sphinx, it looks like it's water eroded. And they go, so.
I'm not trying to take anything away from Mr. Myers and what he's doing. Number one, I love the fact that that he's drawing attention and money for the area. It's sorely needed, and more research is sorely needed. And so anything that can do more for the research of the pyramids, that's a great thing. I just might differ a little bit on the outcome.
I get you. So, I mean, you are the thinking though, that it could have been a pump. Hell, you don't know, right? We don't know. It could have been. It could have been the first Circle K.
Yeah. I don't know, man.
Yeah.
It is one thing he said very true is just don't lose your awe. Don't lose your wonder, because right. It is wondrous. We've seen YouTube videos. They could build it today, mm-hmm. but even today it would be a task. It would be a feat. And the fact that they did it back then, it is something wondrous to behold.
It was funny. They say it took 20, 30 years. This was an interesting thing that he said. It took 20, 30 years, yet they moved the mass of it through the Erie Canal every 2 years. It took 30 back then. Now it takes 2, and we're not even pushing it. You know, we're doing other stuff too.
Right.
You know, it's
right.
just through water, you know, with displacing things. What do you guys think though? How do they let us know, John?
Yeah, Nation. I mean, are we completely off base? Did he have it nailed? And I'm being the way too skeptical a-hole on this show, which is not uncommon.
Or are we silly? Like, why are we even thinking that? Everyone knows that it's meh, fill in the meh. You know,
aliens.
Yeah,
aliens.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
Giorgio, give us a call. The way you can do that, the first way would be going to Hysteria Nation. That is Facebook.
No, stop. The first way is through thought transfer via meditation and my MK
Astral projection.
My MK Ultra classes that I'm teaching now for a nominal fee.
Okay, Nation, go to Facebook.com/groups/Hysteria Nation, or just search for Hysteria Nation. That's our discussion page where we talk about all of this good stuff.
That is right. Also, don't forget, this week, here's what I want you to do. Instagram. We're on Instagram. Hysteria 51 Podcast. Just search Hysteria 51 on there. Give us a follow. We post on there constantly. I'm always posting new stuff, not just the episodes, fun pictures and memes and just silly stuff. And we haven't grown a lot on there. You know, we have, 5,500-ish followers. Let's get that up. Let's bump that up. Share it. Tell your friends. Tell your mom. Tell your mom's friends. Maybe you'll make a new friend. That could be fun. That sounds like one of those Pharaoh's Pump movies you were in.
What's happening right now?
Also,
great job
to us at Hysteria 51 Pod. Patreon. patreon.com/hysteria51, and a long overdue thing that we're going to let our main man Seba do is we're going to give a shout out to a lot of our Patreon members because they deserve it.
Damn straight, they buy my booze for me.
So we're going to let him do that. But first, I got another shout out. Big shout out to Conspiracy Cafe. I was talking to him recently and he bought a hat. And I think it's a conspiracy because it's been returned to me twice saying that his address is can't be found.
Unknown.
And then when I go to the post office, they're like, no, it's in our system. So third time's the charm. It's on the way again. So Conspiracy Cafe, if you do.
Is the zip code on the dark side of the moon?
The zip code was just zeros. It was the weirdest thing.
Oh, that is weird.
Yeah, I wouldn't worry about it. But that's another show. They do conspiracies and aliens and UFOs and the paranormal and all that stuff. So give them a listen too.
And finally, again, a big thank you to this week's guest, Mr. Stephen Myers.
Yes, make sure you go to his website. You check out his books. He runs the Pharaoh's Pump Foundation. You can find all of his links, all of his information at thepump.org.
Thepump.org. You can email him at info@thepump.org.
Yep, that's right. And like we said, we're going to sign off this week with CBOT telling you all our favorite people.
The most woke people in this universe.
I think that is an understatement.
Now, CBOT, I want you to take your time, enunciate clearly, and give each person their due.
These people do not suck as bad as most of you. They bought me booze, so they can live for now. Oh, and just remember, if I mispronounce your name, it's because I don't respect you. 99 Shadows, Aaron and Jamie Babel, Abran Peralta, Andrew Hanwright, Angelo Lamberto, Anna Gritsevic, Axel Hayes, Ben, Brad Tracy, Breland Sullivan, Brian Birney, Brock Masters, Chris Elmore, Chris Konieko, Chris Labe, Krista Squires, Cody Lavoie, Dan Rogers, Dana Otto, Darth, David Andres, David Ray, Dain Zaziski aka Snatched What, on Twitter, Dennis Owens, Derek Johnson, Douglas Davis, Ehecatl Joel Chavez Martinez, Eric Schwalb, Erica Elizabeth, George, Gissa Shans, Glenn Holiday, Heather Probst, J. Zechariah Melton, Jana, Jason Crooker, J. Masterson, Jeffrey Hartranft, Jeffrey McAvoy, John Byron Duplessis, John Donald Carlucci, John Sandy, John Sawyer, John Wallaga, John Yelland, Johnny Kuhn, Justin Ruff, Karen Marie Pastun, Kenneth Bauer, Libby McDermott, Melissa Peary, Mark Avant, Matthew J. Liebke, Matthew Martin, Mashes London, Michael Banty, Michael Lauritsen, Michelle Campbell, Mike Miller, Neil Schwartz, Nick Foglio, Nicole Smith-Bosch, Paja Egdami, Patrick McRae, Paul Curtis, Ray Walden, Ryan Block, Sage Beering, Sam Culper, Shelley Terry, Stefan Feldman, Stephen Jenkins, Steve Hale, Tazzy Gal, The Circle Game, The Other Hand, Tiffany Lambert, Tom Humes, Trent Ward, Vicky K., Zachary Conroy, Zekio.
It was terrible! It was just terrible! I'll never get over it as long as I live!
That's it for another edition of Hysteria 51. John and Brent will be back next week with yet more of the unexplained, the unexplored, and the unheard of. Oh, if it's unheard of, how will they know about it? Anyway, if you want to suggest a topic, give us your thoughts, or just make fun of Conspiracy Bot, that's my favourite, join us in our Facebook discussion group, Hysteria Nation. Just log on to Facebook and search Hysteria Nation, or you can always tweet us at Hysteria51Pod.
You've been listening to a fourth-hand joint.